The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Have the changes in the banking industry affected you? With the looming possibility that your local bank branch might disappear and more web, mobile, and social technologies, what will the changes mean for you and your business? Welcome to Breaking Banks with your host, Brett King. The possibility that banking is no longer a place you go, but just something that you do, has become very real. Now, here is Brett King.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks, another week. I'm live in New York today. The weather is glorious. We're going to hear from Chris Skinner in a moment. He's joining us from London. He asked me how the weather was just before we went on air, and it's been really, really great actually this week. Why am I talking about the weather on a fintech show? Anyway, some interesting news this week. We had our biggest month of listeners last month. It was a big month for us, and turns out we are now the number one fintech radio show in the world. So give everyone a clap. Thanks for listening, because we wouldn't be anything if it wasn't for all you guys listening out there. So thank you for that too. Also, a quick shout out to a couple of people today who posted the thing. Michael Butler, thanks for your tweet today, if you're listening. Ernie Stelzner. Ernie said it's the best night of the week because he gets to listen to Breaking Banks. Fantastic. I love hearing feedback like that. So good. News in the week. You know, we mentioned last week that Amazon... some rumors out. It was last week or the week before, actually, on Mike Walsh show. The rumors about Amazon. Well, you know, the rumors turned out to be true, and Amazon is launching a payment capability. So this is pretty interesting to see how they'll compete with Square. They have roughly similar pricing structure to Square, but the difference is they're offering very significant or very aggressive discounts for the first year of operation. Makes sense for Amazon to launch into this space to give retailers that they're working with on their platform some real world support. So it'd be interesting to see how that goes. But without further ado, let's cross to our UK correspondent, Chris Skinner. Welcome back to the show, Chris.
Hey, Brett, you would be talking about the weather when you talk with an Englishman.
Why is that?
Because the English always talk about the weather.
Oh, that's
our favourite subject.
well, you know, it's weather's one of those things. You get pretty excited about it in London, particularly in Britain, when the weather's good, right? But it's been pretty hot over in the UK, hasn't it?
Yeah, we've had a great summer. It's been pretty quiet in the city in terms of things have settled down, but there's a few storm clouds around at the moment, not the least of which is Amazon, as you referenced, but equally the fact that there's a whole raft of new businesses all trying to grab the banking space in some form or other.
So tell me what's happening at the Silicon Roundabout. What's happening in London that's newsworthy?
We've got quite a lot of exciting stuff going on. I mean, we're having a club meeting at the new Accelerator in October, and the Accelerator is a fintech hub space that's sponsored by and supported by Barclays Bank to enable any new company in the fintech space to gain a place where they can get nurturing, they can get funding, they can get management mentoring. And what's interesting is that a lot of the companies in that space are cryptocurrency development organizations working on the blockchain of Bitcoin, for example. What I find amusing about this is that Bitcoin companies in Britain are thriving, except that none of them can get bank accounts because the banks are running scared of AML and money laundering and sanctions and all that stuff. So,
well, we heard from one of the businesses in New Zealand last week that had to shut down for that very same reason. So, I saw a really great stat from you. You tweeted out earlier today, or it was maybe on LinkedIn or Facebook, about investment in Bitcoin compared with the investment in the early .com phase.
Yeah, I mean, it's a figure that I got from a Business Insider presentation on the future of payments today, saying that Bitcoin venture capital funding this year is more than the whole venture capital funding that went into the internet in 1995. Now, obviously, you've got to discount inflationary figures, but even so, that's a phenomenal testament to where Bitcoin's got to.
Incredible.
But it's not Bitcoin itself, it's the blockchain that's being proven to be interesting. That's where a lot of the investment's going. And over here, we now have a lot of banks that have created venture capital funds to support that sort of nurturing and growth. So Sparebank, the Russian bank's got that 100 million euros, which they're saying will increase to a billion over time. HSBC is putting 200 million. You've got BBVA and Santander and others putting money into fintech startups. And the hub is in that Silicon Valley roundabout, so to speak, as we call it, the fintech hub in London, where we're seeing more growth in new startups than I've seen anywhere. You know, about 2/3 of all European fintech venture capital funding is coming into the UK, so it's a big space.
Do you have any figures on the total fintech investment that's likely in London over the next couple of years?
Well, I mean, the figures we've got at the moment is showing that something like $8 billion of seed capital funding is being put aside by the banks over the next 5 years to nurture new businesses. And if 2/3 of that is coming into UK, London, then you're looking at a multi-billion dollar industry of fintech seed funding and startups coming out of the UK, which is why I'm here. And, you know, it's an exciting place to be. I mean, we're probably seeing 10 times to 100 times more new businesses in fintech than anywhere else in Europe. So it's it is the place to be.
Yeah, well, there's also some interesting pockets of venture capital emerging in Europe. But traditionally, the VC world has obviously been very US focused. Venture funding, if you wanted to start up, then the West Coast was always the place to be. But that's changing when it comes to fintech, because the competency required to invest in these companies is different, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, about one in every $3 that goes into fintech goes into Silicon Valley-based companies. But having said that, in Europe, we're seeing an explosion where the trajectory, for example, of London over the last 5 years is outpacing Silicon Valley in terms of fintech investments. And a lot of that's being orchestrated because of the bridge between Europe, Asia, and America, and the capabilities, talent, and structure that's in these markets. So I'm obviously giving a shameless advert for UK, London markets, but in Silicon Valley, obviously, there is a huge amount of innovation that's taking place, but it's not so much mobile-focused. It tends to be more focused around the internet itself and the digitalization of the financial structures here. It's mobile, social, digital. It's all the stuff that you want to see embraced across all the markets. So it's a really good time.
Great. Well, look, thanks for anything we should be watching over the next few weeks, Chris, in London?
Well, I kind of would like to say yes, except that I'm about to disappear up the Amazon on holiday, not the Amazon website, but the Amazon River, followed by joining you guys in New York and Boston for Cyboson to launch my new book around Finovate in September. So I'm going to be away from London for a while, but the big marker events here tend to be more around things like the Financial Services Club that I run, and equally Barclays is doing a great event on September 11th where I'm speaking, looking at the whole role of cryptocurrencies and digitalization in banking and government, and the role of the traditional banks in the new economy. So that's going to be an exciting day.
Fantastic. Well, enjoy your trip. You're one of the staples in the fintech community, so I don't know how we're going to survive for 3 weeks without you, Chris, but when you get back, we'll be sure to have you on and give us an update on what's happening.
I'll still be making noises, pulling the chain of you and Ron Shevlin and a few others in particular.
Of course. Well, thanks. Thanks for joining us again, Chris.
Yeah, take care, Brett.
Take it easy. Cheers. That was Chris Skinner from the Financial Services Club in the UK. Chris is also the author of a great new book called Digital Bank, which is out on Amazon. So you can check that out if you are interested. Got some great reviews. Moving on. One of the things that I would like to get into today is really how maybe some of the players who are more mid-size players, cope with this shift. And we're delighted to welcome to the show today the Navy Federal Credit Union, who I think have done they're punching way above their weight, I think, in terms particularly of their social presence. But because their audience or their customer base is very mobile, and not in the sense of smartphones, but mobile in the sense of travel the world, That's why you joined the Navy, right? To travel the world. They've got some challenges on their own because the traditional approach, the branch based approach, doesn't work when you've got customers who are remote and on the move a lot. So I'm very glad to welcome a couple of people from the show. I think we have Michelle Towns. Michelle, you there? Megan.
Hi, I'm here.
Megan, you're there. Michelle's going to join us later, hopefully, or Michael is going to join us later. But Megan, tell us a little bit about Navy Federal Credit Union for those who aren't familiar with it.
Sure. We are a credit union. We've been around for about a little over 80 years now, and our focus is solely around our military members, whether they're Army, Air Force, Navy, Marines, the Department of Defense, or their families. We provide superior financial services. And as you mentioned, our membership is worldwide, so we have, over the years, really specialized in how we can reach all of our members, no matter where they are and what point of time they're in.
So we'll get into the social aspect a bit more, hopefully, when Michael joins us. But tell us about the demands of working with the challenges of working with people who are often remote, and what are the unique challenges that you guys have had to deal with over the last couple of decades of your operations?
So some of the unique challenges are just the fact that our members are in all of the time zones around the world. So we need to make sure that their financial services, their finances are always accessible to them. And we do that in several ways. You know, whether they're in Korea or in Djibouti, Africa, we have branches to meet their needs so they can always walk in and have a face-to-face conversation in their time zone. We also have a around-the-clock contact center that people can always call and ask financial questions. And in particular, where I focus on is both on the mobile and online side, where we know that our members are extremely engaged, and having that digital touch point is so huge to our members. We launched our mobile side back in 2010, and at the time we launched, it was really simple. It was text-based banking. You could send a message and get information back, or you could do a quick transfer, or you could sign up for some alerts. And then we quickly evolved into app-based banking, and once we've done that, we've really seen it take off. In fact, just last month, we had over 25 million sessions. Our members are logging in over 18 times a month on average, and it really just speaks to the power of
18 times a month, that's great.
Yeah, it's a great connection for our members to their finances.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know of any bank in the world that would have customers visiting their branches 18 times a month, so that's indicative of the engagement that's possible. But when did you guys first kick off your app-based banking? When did you launch your first app?
So we launched our first app back in 2010, and it was pretty early on in that space, especially for us. And so like everyone else, it took us a little while to figure out which direction would best meet our members' needs. So in 2012, we actually did a complete overhaul of our applications, and we went fully native to the platforms we were on. And that allowed us to do several things. It made the sessions faster for our members because we were building the application based on what the devices would best support. And it allows us to just transmit their financial data across the wire, so everything else was on their devices. And, from that point, we've been able to really innovate in the features that we've been able to offer them. We now offer them things like remote deposit capture, where they can take a picture of a check, make a quick deposit, and bill pay, as well as we've expanded since then into the iPad space, which is a little bit different for us. We provide great content for them and just larger financial tools so that they can manage their money. And, you know, a lot of those are pretty simple right now, simple graphics, easy ways to get in and manipulate where their funds are or where they need to move money into. And over time, we hope to improve those and make those that much more useful for our members.
So do you have a distinct tablet strategy as compared with your mobile strategy when it comes to the app platform?
We do. We believe that people use those devices, and I think the data and the stats show that people use those devices a little bit differently. So for us, we are taking and we're pulling forward the ability to leverage that larger screen size. People tend to dig in more to their finances on that. They spend a little bit more time with it. They're often at home or they're at work. They're in a place where they can lean back and manage their money. So we've taken full advantage of that wider screen. We are able to display more so they get a more comprehensive look, and we have great financial content for them so that as they're looking at their money, they can also get advice or look up information on how to potentially do a transaction that much easier.
And what's your view on the mobile payment space? Are you guys bullish when it comes to mobile payments? We've obviously seen, we're seeing a lot more attention to that now with the EMV shift. But what's your take on that?
So we're very interested in the mobile payment space, primarily because our members are so mobile and they are, around the world. And we also know that our members enjoy technology and they adopt it pretty quickly. So we're keeping a very close eye on what's going on in that space because we know that we need to be ready for our members whenever something does stick. Now, to this point, nothing has really stuck per se, so we're more in a wait-and-see mode.
So you're getting ready for it.
Right. And so to do that, we're doing things like we're thinking about how people are using their phones and their cards. Typically people have their cards with them when they're out shopping and they have their phones with them. So we want to bring tools for our members where they can manage their cards while they're on the go. Things like the ability to let us know when they're on travel or to go ahead and let us know if they've lost their card or turn their card off if they've just misplaced it. Simple things that people need to be able to do when they're out and about, and it makes their lives just that much easier.
What are they currently doing on the mobile platform? So what are the most frequent activities? You mentioned remote check deposit capture earlier, but what else are they doing on the app that you're seeing behaviorally?
So we're seeing, obviously, high volumes of login. A lot of that is going in and looking at their account, seeing what money they have available to them. We also get a lot of transfers. That's just moving money between their accounts or potentially moving money to another member because we have a great service where a member can send money to any other member and it gets there immediately for them. We also allow members to move money back and forth between other financial institutions if they so need. And, overall, I'd say we're seeing those types of transactions grow, particularly in the member-to-member space. It's now about 12% of all of our transfers each month. Which
wow.
is pretty interesting to us because, the P2P space is, again, one of those areas where you hear a lot about it, but we're not sure if it's really useful for folks. That growth there indicates that it might be something our members would want to do more of.
Yeah, it's pretty significant. I mean, it seems like people just want to be able to send money in the simplest way possible. Right. So just, and that frictionless, mobile to mobile is obviously some potential, or P2P.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. So where are you guys going with the mobile channel from here?
So from here, we're looking at more advanced features. We've gotten, I think, all of the basics out there for our members. They can move money. They can see what's going on with their accounts. They can do bill payments. So all of the necessary elements are covered. So as we move forward, we're looking at those step-up features like card management, or we've recently started doing applications on devices, so the ability to apply for a credit card. Next year, we're hoping to have the ability to apply for memberships so that new members can join via mobile. We're also looking at how to help our members make decisions in the moment. So we know when we think about personal financial management, it tends to be this enormous tool, which is interesting, but may not be always useful as you're looking at things or trying to make decisions. So we want to simplify that for our members and provide just little tools that they can use to get a better understanding of what's going on with their money.
Fantastic. Well, listen, I just want to take a quick break, but and we'll come back with and introduce your colleague, Michael, as well, to talk about some of the social media outreach and activities you guys are doing. But can I just check, how many members do you have at Navy Federal now?
Sure. We have over 5 million members right now.
That's fantastic. So, but you talked about 25 million sessions a month on the mobile channel already.
That's correct. And we have, of those 5 million members, over 1 million members have adopted and are actively using the mobile banking channel on a monthly basis.
Does that make mobile your most frequently used channel for the credit union?
It is, actually. So mobile banking is accessed more times per month than any other channel, and it surpassed our online channel in February of this year. We still do get a lot of sessions via our online channel as well. Sure. Our members are just extremely engaged.
So it hasn't dropped the levels of the online engagement. You've just seen this new activity emerge.
We've seen some reduction in online engagement because people are shifting a little bit, but we still do get a strong number of both users and sessions.
So it's not an either-or, though, is it?
Right, right.
Okay, great.
What we have seen is we are now seeing the growth of the mobile-only member, and that is growing as a percentage of our membership base.
Fantastic. Well, we're speaking to Megan, who's the assistant VP. Megan, how do I pronounce your family name?
Gound.
Gound. As it looks. Megan Gound. She's the assistant VP of eChannels for Navy Federal Credit Union. We're just going to take a quick break, and right after the break, we'll be talking to Navy Federal about their social media presence. You're listening to Breaking Banks. We'll be right back after this quick break.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Your bank's customers expect comprehensive, convenient, and consistent service when and where they need it. A mobile app is a great start, but with so many devices and operating systems out there, it can be hard to keep up with demand. That's why today's leading banks count on the Kony Multichannel Experience Cloud. With Kony, you can design, develop, and manage multi-channel apps from one integrated platform. Build an app once, and with one click, you can deploy it securely across all digital channels, phones, tablets, desktop, and more. That means more efficient for you and a better experience for your customers. Want to get to market fast? Explore Kony's range of ready-to-run apps, including retail, commercial, and private banking. With features like person-to-person transfers, targeted campaigns, built-in integrations, and cutting-edge compliance, Kony apps provide the framework and flexibility you need to rise above the competition. Go beyond first-generation mobile banking. Visit kony.com/BK to launch your multi-channel strategy. That's KONY.com/BK.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks, going out on AM 1160 and the Voice America Internet Talk Radio Network to 72 countries. Before the break, we were speaking to Navy Federal Credit Union. We're going to get back to them in a moment, talking about social media. But before that, let's cross to our West Coast correspondent for today, from all the way from LA, Heather Vessant. Welcome to Breaking Banks. Welcome back.
Thanks, Brett. It's great to be here. And I'm really excited to share kind of one of the things I think is very interesting happening here on the West Coast this week.
Tell me about it.
So the news that's found me most intrigued with this week is Amazon released the news that they're going to have Amazon Register.
Yep.
And a lot of the news have covered this story as Amazon is taking on Square. Because Amazon Register, what it is, it's a very much like Square. You plug it into your phone. It's a credit card reader. And so we've got a couple other companies out there that have these types of products. You've got Square, which is probably the most well-known. You have PayPal, which has one too, PayPal Swipe. And now you have Amazon getting involved in this as well. But I actually think it's really limiting to think of Amazon Register as merely a Square competitor. Because if you think about what Amazon has as its resources and assets, it's so much larger. Amazon is also an innovator in transactions, and it has been from the very beginning, from being part of one of the companies that really made e-commerce comfortable and usable. I've been using Amazon, buying things from them for over 15 years. They have a lot of data, and they've processed a lot of transactions. They also reinvent themselves. they were one of the first ones to do what I consider a reputation currency based on their ratings and recommendations.
Yep.
They also accept alternate currencies. I don't know if you've ever paid for any of your Amazon purchases with your American Express points. Have you ever done that?
I don't have Amex.
Oh.
Am I going to get in trouble if I say that on the air? I don't have Amex.
I don't know. I have to say
maybe John Rosner from Bluebird might not come back on the show if I say that. But
they might send you one now. You might automatically get one. But I do have to say one of the reasons I started using my Amex card a lot more for my business purchases is that I could buy things on Amazon with my rewards points. And it's so cool. And in fact, the microphone I'm using right now to talk to you, I bought with my Amex points on Amazon.
Cool.
So it's just like, it's just a really cool thing to think about. Hey, I'm on Amazon. I'm using these other things. So my point is that Amazon's been really innovative in a lot of these spaces. They also released a few weeks ago, maybe about 3 weeks ago, their mobile wallet, which I reviewed and I was a little bit disappointed with because really the offering on the app was really just a way for you to put your frequent rewards cards in it.
Right.
But when you go in online, there's actually like this huge robust back end to Amazon payments, the Amazon payment system. When I did my Kickstarter, Amazon did all the financial back in between that. So, I mean, there's a ton of stuff happening behind the scenes with Amazon that most people don't pay attention to.
They're trying to solve that friction of having to put your credit card detail in every time you want to pay for something online, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And you know what? Square doesn't have that, and even PayPal doesn't have that.
Well, what's different to the Amazon product from PayPal and Square, particularly on the reader side?
Well, as far as the reader's concerned, I think it's pretty straightforward. I mean, what they're doing is to build the audience for it. They are offering a reduced transaction fee. So they're trying to sweeten people over through less, you know, per swipe transaction fee. But Amazon also has this ability to have small businesses have their stores and sell things on there. And I think what they're trying to do is make this be an offline component. So Amazon, we're used to interacting with them online and paying online.
Extending into the real world.
Exactly. So I think, you know, all these are baby steps. Like Google takes a lot of baby steps in a lot of products and services they offer to kind of get it right, get the ideas. You can't go out and expect the mainstream audience to be, yay, I love this whole thing that's perfect and packaged. They kind of go out, put the idea, people use it, they get feedback, they iterate on it. So I see the Amazon Reader or Amazon Register as basically the next step on that. And it could have a very
From clicks to bricks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that's what we used to say, right, in the old days about bricks and mortar. But so the other thing I wanted to ask you about was I saw during the week you were talking about this Slashdot article on cross-border money flows. So tell us about what's happening in that space that's got you interested.
Well, I did a very interesting interview with Nikos Passos in Madrid a few months ago about illicit black market flows. And this is something we don't really think about very often because it's not really tracked. There's no transparency associated with it. But we have significant amounts of U.S. dollars that are leaving the United States illegally, illicitly, through drug or other criminal activities. And so what was really interesting about the Slashdot article is as the police are trying to reduce illegal extraction of U.S. dollars from the U.S. ISFOs of cash, is they were building this technology to be able to kind of like sniff out what money is, you know, if you got like a suitcase full of money, what are the gases that money puts out?
Yep.
So I like this idea because I think that we're going to see more of an evolution of what I like to call smart money. So right now, I think we pretty much have like dumb money. It's when we talk about physical currency is dumb. There's no intelligence associated with it. But there has been proof of concepts where you can embed an RFID tag in the currency. So there's some information to track it. You can have more transparency.
It sounds like a lot of work to bring paper money up to where digital already is at, though, doesn't it?
Well, yes, but if you think about what we try to do with securing the currency, make it less counterfeitable.
Yeah.
We're doing all, and even the kind of security research that's been done with checks to make checks not, you know, counterfeit.
So you're still bullish on cash?
I don't think cash is going to go away anytime soon. I think, well, there are going to be places that it is going to be used.
Yep.
But I think that we're going to see more of an increase towards digital transactions, probably for a lot of people. But I don't think cash is ever going to completely go away.
Okay. Well, you know, that's interesting. We had Dave Woolman on a while back. You remember David, who wrote
yeah.
The Money, and
uh-huh.
you know, Dave Birch, of course, you know, has got a different view on this. But yeah, it's going to be around for a while. Yeah. But I don't know if in 100 years' time it's going to be such a big thing. Listen, Heather, I would love to keep the conversation going, but we're running out of time on this piece. I want to pass back to Navy Federal. But can you come back in a few weeks and you know, engage us on a bit more? And this is great to hear some specific updates out from the West Coast.
Of course, I'd be delighted to.
Fantastic. Thanks for coming on. And if you want to check out Heather Vesant, you can go to heathervesant.com where she writes her blog. And she has a Future of Money project on Kickstarter. It's already been funded, but she's doing a lot in that space. So check that out as well. So at this point, coming back to Navy Federal, it's my pleasure to introduce our second guest from Navy Federal to the show, which is Michael Toller. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, how are you doing, Brett?
Good. Sorry, Michael. Yeah, it's how do I produce your sound?
You your family? You had it right the first time, Michael
okay,
Toner.
Good. Okay, good. And Michael, what do you do at Navy Federal?
I am the manager of social media, so I care for all of our social channels.
Fantastic. Now, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you guys was not only because you just recently updated some of your digital channel strategy stuff and you had a new mobile release and so forth, but Navy Federal Credit Union has around 1.1 million likes on the Facebook page, which that's pretty competitive with the biggest banks in the United States. Why is your audience so engaged on Facebook?
Yeah, I think that number makes us at least the most socially engaged credit union, and yeah, puts us on the same playing field as some of the big banks. I think it's really indicative of our membership. Our members are very socially savvy. This is where they are. We already talked about when you spoke with Megan that. They're on the move. They're mobile. I think the military, you know, just in general is very socially savvy. They were almost forced to use yeah. social media to keep in touch with their loved ones, and that is just simply reflected in our engagement via social.
So, you know, how do you guys use the social channels? Tell me about the range of activities you do and how you support customers on the channel and what you find it's most useful for in terms of that relationship with the community.
Yeah, sure. So, I think we already heard that the mobile channels are a key part of our service to members, and social media is another key part of that service to our members. We're using it really on a couple of different sides. I'd say there's the listening side of social. So listening to what our members are saying about us or to us on social. And when I say listening, I really mean listening just like you would in a conversation. You know, what are they saying? What do they want? What are they asking for? And responding in a very transparent and authentic way. I mean, if you look at our Facebook page, we're not hiding negative comments. We're not scared to really face the complaints, you know. But at the same time, we see compliments. People come onto our Facebook page and say how much they love us. They're a Navy Federal member for 30 years, and we engage.
You guys rock.
yeah, and of course we love that side of it, but. But again, we're not scared of the other side of it. We want these conversations to play out in a social space. I think there's value in building those trust-based relationships with all of our members if we can have those transparent conversations online. So there's the listening side of it. There's also yeah. the marketing side. I mean, we do put out. I hesitate to even call them marketing messages because we focus more on. Financial literacy type content, educational based content. We do a series of Q&As. These are live chats on our Facebook page where we're providing access to our subject matter experts so members can come and ask our experts financial questions, whether it's about how to take out a car loan or it's about credit cards, whatever it may be. And we're using social to facilitate those conversations. So that's, you know, I call it the marketing side, but it's really more of an educational side of social. And then there is the true member service where it's member service complaints or issues or challenges, or somebody is coming onto our Facebook page that is having trouble or wanting to verify whether a check cleared their account and what have you. And while we're not having those conversations fully, obviously there's some personally identifiable information that we have to keep off of social, we are able to at least begin the private message discussion with them.
And how has the organization adapted to this, having to have this conversation, given that social was one of these things we really didn't quite know how to handle it when it first came along, and there was, some banks still, ban use of social media internally for staff. But, how has that transition occurred internally? You get it now, widespread support from the executive, I would imagine, based on the results.
Absolutely. We have executive support from the top down, and that's key, I think, to our success.
But how did you get it to that point? Was
sure.
it just through the fact that it was successful, or?
Well, I think we stepped into social media around 2009, 2010, just when a lot of other, and I'll talk about just the financial institution side of things, I think a lot of other FIs were starting to step into the space, and so the rest of the business world was as well. And we really did what a lot of other businesses were doing. We were simply staking our claim, setting up profiles. We were beginning to post messages online. And then what happened, I think, over the course of a 4 to 5 year period is we started to engage with our members via social, and we started to answer questions. And, one person comes onto our Facebook page and asks about their check clearing, and we answer the question, and then they go and tell their friends, hey, instead of going into a branch or instead of calling, I just went on Facebook and they answered. Well, once you right. start that, you can't stop.
Yeah.
And I think, and now I think we are, if I said we started in 2009, 2010, so let's say 5 to 6 years later, we're starting to organize for scale. We recognize that the
sure.
channel is not going anywhere. We're starting to put true processes in place around social, really elevating social to a marketing discipline
a relationship right. discipline, right?
Yeah, exactly. Or an experience management. I mean, it's not just from a marketing perspective, but it's this true relationship that we're building with our members. And so, that's kind of where we came from, how we got to where we are today, and now starting to organize for scale. And I think what that really leads to in the future is, empowering our entire employee base to use social media. One of my big strategic imperatives is that social can't just live within the marketing and advertising function, that it really must live within the business units. They have a vested interest in the success or the use of social media for their own success.
Absolutely. So can I ask you which of the social media channels you use and which are most engaged by your community?
So Facebook is definitely our number one. We get a lot of attention with the 1 million fans. I think Twitter would be second in line, and using it both, we have two Twitter accounts, actually three, the main Navy Federal handle. There's also a Navy Federal Help handle, which we're beginning to transition some of our member service questions that are coming in through Twitter over to that handle to really focus the conversation from that Navy Federal Help handle. And then there's also the Navy Federal News. So we work closely with our corporate communications team as they're using that to distribute news messages and build relationships with the news media.
So it's interesting. I've seen that trend with, particularly in the U.S. banks. It does happen in the U.K. banks as well and some offshore, but I'm seeing more and more that Twitter is almost being treated like you have when you have different call-in lines in the call center. It's different Twitter handles for different purpose. But I guess that makes sense from the type of conversation you're going to have. So.
Right. Yeah, and I don't think we're looking to proliferate the Twitter handles any further than we already have. I think the three are serving the purpose.
What about things like Pinterest, Instagram, Snapchat? Are you guys experimenting with any of that as yet?
Yeah, absolutely. We are on Instagram, and actually have seen quite a bit of success. I'd say it's probably a 5-to-1 engagement ratio as compared to Twitter. So we post a tweet, maybe we're getting a couple of dozen retweets or likes or favorites or whatever it may be. And on Instagram, it's quite a bit higher engagement. And I think that's
all right, cool.
very interesting.
Listen,
for us to keep experimenting
Michael, stick around. We're just going to have a quick break, and then we'll ask both you and Megan to come back and talk about where this goes from here for Navy Federal Credit, okay?
All right, sounds good.
Great. So you're listening to Breaking Banks. I'm your host, Brett King. We are just going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with you. See you in a moment.
Business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Attend Payments 2014 to meet the forward-thinking leaders and disruptors who are transforming how we pay and get paid. Get a glimpse into the next wave of payments innovations and challenges through fast-paced interactive demonstrations, educational sessions, and a buzzing exhibit hall. Register now at payments.nacha.org. Payments 2014 is presented by NACHA, the Electronic Payments Association, the recognized leader in payment system education. The Payments Conference, transform imagination into strategic innovation. Register today at payments.nacha.org.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network wherever you go. In addition to listening live, you can check out information about your favorite talk show hosts, discover new talk show personalities, add shows to your list of favorites, and listen to all our show archives on demand. All from your iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market, and get ready to tune in. The Voice America mobile app, powered by Aircast.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. I'm your host, Brett King. We are live on AM 1160 in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and via Voice America to 72 countries. Just right now, what I'd like to do is cross to our regular Australasian correspondent, Andy McLean. I was going to say McBeal. I don't know where that came from. Andy McLean. Andy, tell us what's happening from New Zealand.
Thanks, Brett. This week we're going to be carrying on our theme of Kiwis and fintech, and I have Serge Van Dam of Fiserv on the line. Serge heads up the digital channels for Fiserv's international business. So just, I thought I'd just start by asking, are there particular problems that you're tackling when you go about your product development at Fiserv? How does it tend to start off?
Well, I think some of the key problems that bankers are looking at the moment, the first one is, what are the differences between the distinct digital channels, you know, mobile, tablet, and online? There's this notion of omni-channel, but then if you look at how consumers are using those distinct channels, they've got pretty specific habits around them, and they use them in different ways. And so bankers are really trying to figure out how to specifically address the needs and capabilities of all of those devices. And we call that tailoring the experience. And that's definitely one of the challenges bankers are facing. One of the other areas of interest, I think, at the moment is many of the major banks we work with are looking at whether they should set up a digital-only bank as a challenger brand or something similar to try and accelerate the degree of development and investments they're making in digital banking. And I think that notion's pretty interesting, and it really is applicable around the globe.
Yeah, well, it's certainly applicable in the UK. I can think of plenty of banks who've got exactly that dilemma at the moment. And so I suppose, you know, how do you go about engaging with banks? You know, have you got some stories to share?
Well, at Fiserv, you know, we are a traditional technology provider. I mean, we are a $4.8 billion business focused entirely on serving banks through technology, and about half of that comes from electronic banking and payments. And so, you know, we already have established relationships with many financial institutions. But I guess a lot of it nowadays, you know, it's changed because digital banking has accelerated in terms of its development, in terms of the ideas that are popping up, and in terms of the aggression with which the industry is changing and the disruptors are changing it as well. And so, you know, it's actually conferences like Finovate and FinTech innovation conferences that are really starting to put us in touch with the right people in banks who are those change agents within those financial institutions that really see how the future of banking is changing so quickly and is going to for the, you know, in the foreseeable future.
And when you mentioned the people within the banks, change agents, who are these people typically? Are they innovation teams, or are they people sort of embedded in, you know, particular business areas?
In my experience, you know, there's always going to be a head of digital channels or a similar kind of role in almost any financial institution. But the change agent can be anywhere in the organization. I don't really think there's a formula. It's typically someone who's trusted by the executive team, who's very, very passionate, and truly believes that the world of banking is changing for the better and forever as a result of this transformation in consumer habits.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, just the executive sort of support there and the passion. I mean, I've definitely experienced when that doesn't happen, actually, quite often, and it really prevents, you know, good technology partners like yourselves from actually getting through the door, so to speak. So I can definitely relate to that. Just carrying on a slightly different theme, I was just having a look at some of the stuff you guys are doing at Fiserv. I see you're big on alerts and also wearables. Can you tell us a bit about how you're bringing those aspects into banking?
Sure. One of the key themes in terms of our product investment is what we call proactive banking, which is the notion that consumers have in their mind that financial institutions have a lot of information about them and should proactively notify the consumer when something unusual happens or when they need to take action, such as a payment being due or so forth. So, you know, we built a pretty comprehensive enterprise alerts platform that we've had live in market for 4 or 5 years now. And, of course, with the advent of push notifications, it gives you a whole lot more flexibility around how you do alerting, both in terms of which devices it gets delivered, as well as sort of the content, you know, so you can put multimedia in them, you can make these alerts actionable. There's lots of things you can do. And one of those things that really, there's an extension of those push notifications is really the extension to wearable devices, whether that be smartwatches, Google Glass, etc., because they run very similar constructs in terms of push notifications. So one obvious application of wearables for us in fintech will be around instant alerts, and it could be things like fraud notifications, it could be some sort of exception conditions. And we think, you know, that you know, wearables, we don't really know where it's going to go, but we do believe that one area that's kind of for certain is that alerts to those wearables is going to be something that consumers will want to see.
Yeah, I can just sort of see a corporate treasurer now getting an alert on his wearable watch, you know, to say an order's filled or something like that, and then probably carry on having his lunch, I guess.
Exactly.
All right. Well, just before we go, any final words of advice that you would give to a fintech startup, you know, trying to make it at the moment?
Well, look, I've been part of a fintech startup, which is how I ended up at Fiserv. I think that, you know, one of the things that frustrates a lot of fintech startups is the decision-making process inside a bank. It's often not very clear who makes the decision, and obviously decisions are never taken at the speed a startup would expect. I guess the key perspective is that things do take a while, but you know, if you find the right kind of change agent that we discussed just before, if you find the passionate advocate for this change that's going on in our industry, I think that if you found that right person in the organization, you can actually make it happen.
Well, Serge, thanks very much for joining us on Breaking Banks. Now it's back to Brett in New York.
Thanks, Andy. We'll hear some more interesting news, reports from Down Under. So it was interesting to hear Fiserv, who's really, I didn't know a New Zealander had started Fiserv, so that's pretty cool. Anyway, back to Navy Federal. Megan and Michael, you guys still around?
We are.
Yeah, sure.
Good. So what we normally do at this part of the show is we often like to sort of take a bit of a look 5 to 10 years out and think about what the logical conclusion of all of these changes in behavior that we're seeing right now, how that will evidence itself out in a few years' time. So thinking about that, where do you see this going for Navy Federal? Maybe, Megan, you want to have a shot at this first. What's the interactions with a member going to be like in 5 to 10 years' time?
So when we look at 5 to 10 years out, I think there's a couple of things that we will continue to see. PCs are going to continue to decline in sales, so mobile is really taking over some of that space. and we'll see that continue. What we don't know right now is what shape that'll take. The last correspondent mentioned wearables. There's obviously the phone devices themselves. Those could be complementary to each other. There's a lot of possibilities. And what I think is really exciting about that is where we could potentially leverage those or take those possibilities from a financial perspective. You know, a few years ago, no one thought about using a camera to deposit a check. And now we've got things like biometrics and voice control and other things of that nature. So it's going to be very interesting to see where that evolves and what sorts of financial tools we can provide to our members. You know, we're looking at things like what can we learn from non-financial applications like fitness apps or games that we can then apply to financial education and normal transactions that our members do that will help improve their experience, help them understand their money a little bit better, and ultimately help them achieve their financial goals. So that's what we're looking at over that time horizon, as well as just working through all the changes that we know for a fact will come through mobile.
Now, I noticed before, Megan, you said that you've started experimenting with applications online. So particularly you mentioned the credit card side of things. How bullish are you guys on sort of how this engagement model on mobile will change revenue, particularly for existing customers?
So we're pretty bullish on how engaged our members are. In fact, when we launched our credit card application via mobile, it was an experiment. And now we're seeing a solid percentage of credit card applications come through the channel. And if we look across all of our digital properties, we're getting about 30% of applications are being completed from a mobile device, which is pretty staggering. I mean, that's changing over time. A few years ago, it certainly wouldn't have been there. So I think as we develop those types of tools for our members to apply for new products, for things that they need, we will see that shift come into mobile more and more.
Do you have any comments to add, Michael?
I think from the social side, I guess the future of social is a seamless banking experience. I mean, right now, social, we talked about social from a member service perspective, but we're going to keep seeing the continued integration of social across the business. Megan just mentioned the mobile application. Well, what about social sign-on or social completion of credit card applications and things like that, using social to facilitate the business of banking? That's at least where I think things are headed.
Okay, cool. So tell me about, in terms of the behaviors that you see emerging, how do you guys feel Navy Federal is changing the nature of the relationship with customers with digital? Do you guys feel that now that you're having a stronger relationship with your customers, a deeper relationship through digital because it's sort of multifaceted, or is it just shifting from the way you used to work with them to a new channel?
So there certainly are some shifts that we're seeing. But one of the other things that we're seeing is just increased engagement overall. In a lot of ways, both mobile and social make it easier for people to stay in touch because, from a traditional sense, you used to have to go somewhere. You went to a PC, you went to a branch, you went to a desk phone. Today, with mobile, you always have it with you, no matter where you are. So it's very accessible for people, and they can check on their accounts no matter where they are. So that's great for our members and for people in general who want to stay in touch with their finances.
Yeah, just a quick thought to add to that. I think we're looking to put the member at the center of the entire banking interaction. What does that look like in terms of, how they conduct their banking business, how they interact with us? I think social CRM is kind of another place where this could head. It's whatever touch point the member is using to interact with us, having a single place where that interaction can live and from a member service perspective, we know when the last time they talked with us on Facebook or when the last time they called or when the last time they came into a branch. We know how the members like to interact with us. But putting them at the center of that interaction.
No, absolutely. And I think that's what it's about, isn't it? That they feel like they're at the center of it with social. It's something a lot more personal. So, Megan, just quickly before we finish up, what do you guys think about wearables and the technology? You talked about Fitbit before and sort of the financial health, or so the health aspect and how that mirrors. But what do you think about the trend in wearables?
So wearables is another area that we're paying close attention to. We're watching it. It hasn't quite stuck yet. But I think that it could be a powerful tool, much like mobile is for members, if we really see something that takes off in that space. I mentioned text messaging early on, where we could send, you know, it was one of the first implementations of mobile where you could send those messages about account information to members. Well, this could be another platform where someone could get those messages no matter where they were, and it's just a quick glance at what you've got right on you. So I think there's a lot of opportunities there. It's just a matter of time and the right environment for those to take off.
Yeah, a lot of thinking about context that we have to put into that too. So,
right.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Megan and Michael, for joining the show today. Megan Gound, who heads up Assistant VP for Digital Channels, and Michael Toner, who looks after the social channels. Thanks for joining Breaking Banks this week.
Thank you very much, Brad. Yeah,
thanks so much for having us.
So next week, guys, we have an interesting show. We're actually going to be hearing from Ukraine in terms of how the situation with Russia there has impacted the banking sector and people in terms of doing their day-to-day banking. So Morten Craik from the CIS Bankers Association will be joining us next week as well. We're also probably going to have an update from Africa, and you'll hear a couple more of our correspondents again. Thanks for joining us again this week. You've been listening to Breaking Banks, the number one fintech radio show in the world. We'll see you again next week. Bye.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll explore more changes and challenges next week.